Mr. Chairman, first I want to call people's attention to, although it might need Mr. Albrecht for this, for this page, which is our proposal from the Senate on the federal stimulus money. And it basically is kind of a split the difference proposal. Mr. Albrecht, would you just like to explain the proposal for the stimulus money? Yes, the audience has it.
Mr. Chair and members, this shows you the result of the legislative decision that has been made with respect to allocating the available federal stimulus money between K-12 and higher education. And what this shows you down at the very bottom is that the amount that is going to be allocated to higher education is $168.489 million. And it also shows you down at the bottom that the total general fund reduction for the systems is $197.975 million. What's not shown on this sheet, and I apologize for that, is what the net result of all of that is. In the current biennium, the net overall reduction is $60.032 million for 10 and 11. And after you add in the $30.546 million from 2009, the end result for all of higher education is a net reduction of $29.486 million. For the University of Minnesota, I will focus just on the column at the far right that says 2009 to 2011 total. That incorporates all of the federal money. The reduction is $100.472 million, and $85.216 million is restored, and that is an 85% restoration. For MinSU, the reduction is $97.503 million, and $83.273 million is restored, which is also an 85% restoration. And then the total amounts are what I discussed earlier. One thing that is not shown on this sheet, again, I apologize. I did get here very early this morning and make a revised sheet. For MinSU, the line there that says general fund after reduction, if these numbers are agreed to, that amount would be increased by $4.8 million each year, and that would reflect the transfer of the learning network, which is a decision the committee has made. However, that amount would not figure into the calculations for allocating either the general fund reduction or the allocation of the federal stimulus money.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, that's our proposal. Should I go through the rest of the proposal?
Yeah, why don't you go right now?
Okay. On the offer sheet, the state grant, the Senate proposal. Should I do this? Or Dennis, do I can do it. Well, let Dennis do it, and then I'll comment.
That's fine.
Mr. Chair and members, the Senate's proposal, this is the column that's labeled 1130 last night, to increase the four-year
courses. But the goal here is to have the students take the ACCUPLACER or similar college placement test, and then if it determines that they need remedial courses, to take it in the summer using their state grant money. They would not be eligible then for a ninth semester under this proposal. And then, but that would make them more prepared for college. We still have an issue where a lot of our students, as you well know, members, need remedial courses or not ready for college. But it's really important, I think, that we get them ready in this transitionary period when we're still not graduating students that are prepared for college. But it is designed just like the state grant, so they use the state grant money, and that is used to pay for up to 15 credits of remedial courses in the summer.
Madam Chair, let me ask you a question.
You're the chair.
Senator Babbitt, I just can't get up. You've been chairing only the gavel, so you can't get away from coming.
Yesterday, though, I followed your example and been talking.
Well, you follow what you need for God. I'm a bad example. Anyway, how are these programs going to be selected? Boy, is she going to be remedial type program?
Mr. Chairman, it's many of our colleges, especially our two-year colleges, already have a summer bridge program, and the students can pick. I mean, it's logical if they take an ACCUPLACER and they live in the Normandale area and they're going to go to Normandale that they would take their summer, attend the summer remedial programs at Normandale. But it really is independent of OHE. It's up to the college. Now, I did put language in that says I would like the summer remedial classes to be research-based so that they may include things like a support group for the students, so that they have their little cohort, like the Power View has, people that they can have as their support group. Gets them on campus, it gets them more familiar with campus, so that they're, again, more college ready to really buckle down and do well in college in the fall. So at this point, Mr. Chairman, we don't know exactly how many students will sign up for it, but, we projected that it wouldn't start until the second year of the biennium. It would be about 2.4 million if everybody signed up for it, but we don't know if everyone will. And, we'll just see how it goes. We can just monitor it as it goes along.
Well, you said that
we have an evaluation requirement in it as well.
Senator, you said that many of these programs are in place already. Are they equally distributed throughout the state, or are they mostly in the metro area, or where there's high concentration?
Ms. Weidman, you did a study of all these summer bridge programs. Can you give us an idea of where they're located?
Madam Chair, there are a number of programs. Some are offered as part of TRIO. A lot of the TRIO programs offer a summer bridge program. There also are some programs that MSU offers through their the money we gave them for the access and opportunity grants. There's some programs through that, and those are kind of dispersed throughout the state at various campuses. And the University of Minnesota also has some programs that they're implementing.
I have a note here, Mr. Chairman, that says that Mesabi Range Community College has a Upward Bound program that's federally funded, and they would be able to expand it with this money from the students to serve more students. Right now, they're only able to serve 50 students in 10 schools, but 2,000 meet the eligibility criteria of needing remedial in the summer.
Maya, is that the sheet that we had handed out that showed a number of these programs and where the grants were distributed?
You handed out, or I did?
No, you did.
Yes. And also the language members is on R34.
You said that this program would start until the second year, which I was going to bring that up. I think it would be appropriate until July, but it will take a while to get it established. But I think in the dollars, you've got it before.
Mr. Albert, you want to explain that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, honestly, I can't explain it because it has to do with trailing terms.
taught, and we have a mechanism where money on the bottom line goes to LME.
Senator Pappas, just for my clarification, so is the same grant requirements that are currently on the Golden State Grant Program as far as they're coming? Is that right?
No. Oh, what's the difference?
Nice that we're bringing up a brand new program on our last day. We've got to finish the bill so everybody can
understand. We talked, Mr. Chairman, I think we talked about it early, but you weren't here.
Senator Lynch, are you mad at us or what?
Mr. Chairman, we did talk about it early on in our conference committee, but I think it was during a time when either Representative Lai or Representative Haas was chairing. You were busy with your economic development bill.
Dennis, you want to explain what the difference is?
Mr. Chair and members, on page R39 is the language describing the one-time grant within the state grant program. To be honest, it's been some time since I looked at this. Essentially, on lines 28.22 to 28.24, is direction to calculate the grant differently for a student who is below 185% of the poverty guideline. And for other students on in just the general paragraph 9B is how it would be calculated for all other students.
Give us an example.
Mr. Chair and members, if you are a lowest income student, you would not be subject to the assigned student responsibility under the regular state grant formula. Instead, your assigned student responsibility would be equal to the amount of work hours that are dictated by the language. So, whereas you would pay approximately 46% of the cost under the regular state grant, under this program, you're limited to approximately, remind me if I'm wrong, then I said about $900 if you enrolled full time.
And what would it be normally?
Approximately $150 a credit for 15 credits. I'm not that fast of a calculator. It'd be slightly higher, approximately. If I'm remembering correctly, in the range of about $1,500. So the student would be receiving them an extra $600 for that summer term.
Why are we using, federal poverty guidelines and state grant program? All of a sudden, we don't really put that in statute anymore, do we, or in session on the same language?
Mr. Chair, no. I don't believe federal poverty guidelines are in the other state grants.
So why do we put it in here? Do we word it a different way than the same thing?
I think we could work on that.
Mr. Chair, I think you could accomplish the same or similar result by directing that paragraph to students with an expected family contribution of zero.
Maybe you can get us some language if we decide to. Okay. Senator, you want to keep going on your proposal then?
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, in your bill, you cut the 2-year caps for the for-profit colleges, and in our bill, we restored the caps to where they were before the 2003 cut. And in this proposal, we're doing kind of no change to the 2-year caps. And our rationale for that is that they did not get restored after 2003 when we did restore in other areas. I don't really remember what we did. But we just felt like, that was a good compromise between your proposal and our proposal. And that, 2/3 of the kids who do go to 2-year for-profit colleges are Pell Grant eligible. These are our kids, too, and they just have a choice that they want to go to a private college or a for-profit college for whatever reason. Maybe it's more user-friendly. They can get in and out more quickly. They can take classes evenings and weekends. They can enter mid-year. They don't have to wait for a semester. There's a lot of reasons why they may choose that kind of program. And
tonight. We just thought we should stay at the two-year cap. Moving on, we, in our last offer, we had been working with the Office of Higher Education. Maybe Mr. Mishakonis could come forward to craft something that would be acceptable to the governor on the ACHIEVE program, but also get at another policy goal of ours, which I've talked about before, and that is that we do have students who are certainly very capable of achieving at college, but they don't go to college because they're freaked out by the cost. And there is some studies in the Office of Higher Education paper. They talk about if you want to improve access, that a subsidy and aid program is more effective than lower tuition because students do get sticker shock. And once again, members, I passed out this graph earlier that talked about students who are high ability but low income attend college at a lower rate or a comparable rate to students who are low ability but high income. And I really feel like these are the students that is most important for us to get into college because they have the best opportunity of being successful. If they do well in high school, that is the best predictor of doing well in college. And because they've done well in high school, we're rewarding them by paying, on top of the Pell Grant and the state grant, more of the cost of attendance for them. That was my original proposal. The governor would like us to continue with some money for middle-income students, kind of lower middle-income students. So we do a phase-out. So the bottom level is capped at $3,900, and then we phase out at the state grant, the top of the state grant level at $1,200. We include the governor's request for an online bonus, a one-time bonus of $150. And I have altered my proposal. My original proposal was for 4 years, and I've cut it back to 2 years. So, Mr. Mishakonis, did I leave anything out?
Madam Chair, I don't believe so. I think it summarized it all.
Oh, good.
Well, you know, I wasn't privy to these negotiations between the Senate and the OHE, so I have no idea what the hell is going on here, nor does probably anybody in this room. So why don't you tell us how the program would work under the new revised program that revised the old program that was the program that none of us saw?
Mr. Chair, for the record, this, I'm Mark Mishakonis from the Office of Education. We do have a sheet that we can pass out that actually I think both you and Senator Pappas saw the other day. There's quite a bit of detail on here, but maybe while this is being passed out, I can talk about the process, the negotiated process, if you will. When Senator Pappas had brought her proposal out actually earlier on in the session, but when it came out in the final bill, there was, I think, some concern in the governor's office and actually on our part, too, about the workability and the change. And I think in the letter from the governor to the conferees, he suggested that he was willing to make some adjustments to the current program, but I think he used the term he didn't want a wholesale redesign. So we tried to come up with some alternative. Senator Pappas's bill, somewhere between your position, Mr. Chair, which was to eliminate the program, and Senator Pappas's position in the bill that came out of the Senate. We had worked on this last week, but of course we needed the approval of the governor to come forward to you with that. We didn't meet with him until Thursday afternoon. Before that time, we had no conversations with Senate on this, except for the fact that we were thinking about things, but nothing more than that. Once we got his approval on Thursday evening last week, we came to Senator Pappas first in the morning because I think we could get a hold of her, and then, Mr. Chair, to you when we met outside the House chambers. So there weren't really negotiations. There was simply here's another way to think about this. Then on Friday afternoon, we worked on some language. We did share all this information with your staffs on both sides and the language yesterday as it was kind of confirmed. So that's been the process so far. So this at this point is an idea to put in front of you. There's a lot of detail on the sheet that's being passed out. Let me kind of summarize it, and maybe Ms. Ferguson can give you some more details. There was concern about the level of income on the Senate side that it only went up to $39,000. The original ACHIEVE program went up to $75,000. And there was some sense that there was a need to get back to this middle-income, kind of lower to middle-income population. Senator Pappas, as you indicated, Mr. Chair, was using poverty guidelines. We thought it might be more appropriate both administratively and more consistently with the state grant program, the state of Pell and state grant eligible. So we suggest. came up with a different way to award the program, to align it better with the state grant program. So now it's kind of embedded, if you will, with the state grant program, although it stands alone separately as achieved. So administratively, it's going to be easier for the financial aid officers, too. I think we've solved the problem that Peter Zetterberg has raised for the last 2 years about a separate application for achieve, so I think that's dealt in this as well. We tried to spend about the same amount of money as that was in the Senate's bill. The number of students, currently it's about $2,200 on the achieve. Senator Pappas reduces that substantially because she moves a lot of money from the lower end. We kind of hit a middle ground. So there's about 1,700 students that qualify under this program with this proposal. In many of the other ways, this aligns with the Senate proposal because, as I mentioned, the governor was willing to make some adjustments, especially on the rigor side, which was, I think, always part of this program on the parent side. So if there's some detail on that, pretty much summarizes it, Mr. Chair. I think spend the same amount of money for kids, higher up on the income spectrum, lower grants.
Mr. Cass, remind me how much you spent over the last biennium on achieve.
Mr. Chair, I think it's in the range of $4 million.
So, Mr. Cass, did you push real hard to get this program out there to the citizenry?
Mr. Chair, we beat the bushes as best we could. We were sending out emails to students, I think, at some point. And the financial aid officers, we repetitively tried to get this thing moving.
So let me get this straight. So we spent about $2.2 million, I think, a year, right?
Mr. Chair, the program was really effective in the second year of the biennium.
We really beat the bushes, and we spent about a little over $4 million, right?
Sure.
And then you proposed, I think, 8.7 with the $150 take an online class proposal.
Yeah, I'm sure what we did when we put the budget together was take what we thought was going to be the last year's, our actual for 09, we increased it by 10% growth rates for 10 and 11, just as all new programs, the take-up rate is kind of sparse to begin with, and as the work gets out, as we move away.
But it was $1,200 plus the $150.
So that's what it was, yes, ma'am.
So then I could get a letter from the governor dated April 28th that says, my budget recommends funding the Achieve Scholarship Program at $8.5 million for the biennium, with the $150 in there for the online course. The Senate plan proposes to transform the program from one that benefits students from low and middle income backgrounds to one that benefits students from low income backgrounds. The House plan proposes to eliminate Achieve. I am open to some modification of the program, but I am not open to a wholesale redesign or elimination of the program. So would you consider what happened here in the last few days a wholesale redesign?
Mr. Chair, members, I think that was the sense that the Senate position went too far in changing the program.
So what's the difference between what we're doing today with no public testimony, really, and a whole new program, and what this letter says as far as not doing a wholesale redesign of the program?
Well, Mr. Chair, all I guess I can say is how one defines wholesale redesign is something that's in the eye of the beholder. The governor did see this and said that he was comfortable with the change from the current program to the proposal. He was concerned if we went any further than this. In fact, I think rather reluctant to go much further than this.
Remind me, what did the governor propose before he decided to accept the stimulus money? What did he propose to do to our two systems here? Is it almost an 11% cut?
I think 10.7% cut for one and 10.8% for the other.
Which I assume may happen if he decides to run for governor and, heaven forbid, gets reelected. It might be his proposal 2 years out, so we're going to start a brand new program like this. We don't even have enough money to fund our system.
Mr. Chair, I think again, getting back to the original governor's position was the current program.
Would the governor accept going back to his original $8.5 million proposal with $150?
Mr. Chair, I think that my sense of having conversations with people over there is that the governor is a compromiser and is willing to change and recognizes that, you know, this was a new program 2 years ago, and frankly, it was cobbled together in a conference committee in a way
This is like, you know, the Senate offering $12 million for technology, us offering $20 million, and the
Mr. Chair, this is just a proposal in front of you. I think that everybody's concerned about tail issues as the Senate came back with a two-year program, I believe, instead of the four-year.
Okay. In looking at your sheet, my nonpartisan staff in the House is telling us that what you've got on the sheet there as far as the awards ranging from 1,200 to 3,900 isn't what the language says. I mean, maybe, Kathy, can you explain it to me?
Mr. Chairman, it does match what the language says here. It doesn't match the way it has been discussed over the last 24 hours that the awards would go down to $900, and it doesn't deal with the question that we had about if you're not eligible for if your cost of attendance is not $1,200. $900, are you ineligible then for a grant? It could create a cliff.
Did Vince, you address that then? Excuse me, OHG?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not exact. This program does require students to be enrolled full time, so I'm not sure at what institution where the cost of attendance for a full time student would be.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's an add-on grant, though. And so if other financial aid covers the cost of attendance, we have a question about how the minimum grant is dispersed, whether it is an absolute minimum of $1,200, regardless of the remaining cost of attendance, after all other financial aid is considered.
Tell us how that's going to work, since we've never discussed it before.
Mr. Chair and members, the award calculation actually takes the state grant budget for a student at a four-year institution and calculates the assigned and uses the assigned student responsibility for that student multiplied by 0.50. So under the governor's recommendations for state grants, the assigned student responsibility is approximately $7,881 next year, of which the achieved scholarship under this proposal would cover half. So $3,944. That would be the maximum grant. The only way that award would be reduced is if the student had a parent contribution under the state grant formula. So if the student had a parent contribution of approximately $1,000, you would then subtract out $500 from that $3,944 number. So the student would get an achieved scholarship of $3,444. Should the parent contribution go up to a level higher than approximately $6,000, the minimum grant would come in and that student would receive $1,200. As long as they were eligible for Pelham State grant, they would get $1,200.
Okay, any questions by members?
I'm looking for some more information about the achievement program and wondering if there's any information about where the recipients who took advantage of this program, where they came from, or is there any information about that? They across the state? Or,
Mr. Chair, for example, we actually did a report on this back in January. We have a map. I'm not sure if we have one with us right now, but perhaps maybe you can describe that distribution across the state.
Welcome to the committee. Would you?
We're recommending to students in the Office of Higher Ed, my manager, the Achieve Scholarship for the last year. And we did have a report that came out earlier in the year. I don't have it with me in front of me, but I did put together a map, and all but I think it was one county had at least one recipient, one eligible student, and I think that was Kitson. But other than that, it was very widespread across the state. And some of the, I think I also put together kind of what it was like based on the number of high school graduates from that county as well. And normally you'd see obviously the higher numbers in the metro areas, but when I did it based on the number of high school graduates, even in the rural areas and outstate, there were higher concentrations because the number of students that usually that meant there was a high school counselor in that high school that was very on board with the shooting and was making sure.
I don't know if this question is for you, Mr. Michikanis, but. Or do you, but when you're figuring the amount out for next year, we've got a proposal in here, I think, for calculation? And how would you have known that unless the senator gave you all the info while she was conspiring with mine?
Mr. Chair, for purposes of calculating the achieved cost estimates, we did use the governor's recommendation, which does not increase the LME much as the proposal before us this morning. However, the governor's proposal does increase the four-year cap more than the current proposals on the table. Given those two parameters, they tend to offset each other in this calculation. So whereas the House proposal increases the LME more and the four-year cap less, it does come up with an end result that is very similar to what we used in our cost estimate.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gibbons.
Mr. Chairman, I forgot your name, the administrator of the Achieve Program.
Fitzgibbon.
Fitzgibbon. Ms. Fitzgibbon mentioned something that I think is very, very important. She talked about the advantage of having a high school counselor that was advising students. And that brings me to the next item on the offer sheet, where I am dropping the $3.5 million that the Office of Higher Education used to fund advising and counseling at high schools across the state. And, Mr. Chairman, when you and I were discussing privately, you talked to me about how much the funding for K-12 has grown compared to the funding for higher education. It keeps this from 1987 when we were in the House.
Read my poem.
All right. K-12 funding in 1987 was $2,970,000,000. Higher ed was $1,657,000,000. 2009, K-12... $14,349,000,000, higher ed, $3 billion. So it used to be more of a 1 to 2, and now what is this?
Four to one.
So I, you know, but this is the silo that we're in. If we had a P20 system, we wouldn't have to be competitive with K-12. We would just be doing what was right. And what is right is to have counselors in the high school that make sure kids are taking the rigorous courses, that they're preparing for college, that they have a career plan starting in eighth grade, and that they're getting good grades to prepare for college. And then they're successful in college and they don't need remedial, et cetera, et cetera. So I am extremely upset that the House asked me to drop the funding. We only had money for 1 year. I'd hope to fund it for another 2 years so that we would have 3 years of data so we could look at this to see how successful our students are when they have good advising and counseling services. But, Mr. Chairman, I'm sympathetic to what you're saying, is that K-12 should be paying for counselors in our high schools.
Yeah. Did I hear you right?
I agree with you that K-12 should be paying for.
Well, I'm sympathetic to the fact that we need counselors too, but I was wondering if K-12 is. I mean, are they moving this up?
That's exactly the point. They made a decision with a budget that's grown fourfold compared to ours growing less than twofold to not fund counselors. And I just can't keep taking what little resources we have left for our public institutions, particularly, and moving them into the K-12 system. So that's where I'm coming from.
Mr. Chairman, I'll continue.
And I appreciate the fact that
I'm
not a reactionary on this.
I really think it's important, and I really think it needs to be done, and I'm giving it up. I am asking for $500,000, which was extra money in the Achieve program, and it's funding the Intervention for College Access program, which we have on another line item in our bill, which I think we both are at same level funding. This is a little extra money for them. This goes out, I think, some high schools, but a lot of colleges and nonprofits. And again, it's to improve student access into college. And by funding this for another 2 years, we can have data to look at these programs to figure out how successful they are. I have language asking the programs to give us an idea about scaling. So if they do have a successful program, how they would expand it from 50 students when the need is 2,000 to 2,000 students.
Madam Senator, now this is a kind of a new proposal, although But anyway, so how is there language with this for to see that the money's being spent and actually accomplished?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we have do we have evaluation language on this one? I think we do. We also this is money. We give the Office of Higher Education authority to move money around to different programs so that we don't have money left on the bottom line. So if they have extra money in work study, they can transfer it to child care. If they have extra money in achieve, they can transfer it to ICAP. Money left on the bottom line just transfers back to the general fund. So we want to make sure we're keeping all the higher ed money in higher ed. So that brings me, Mr. Chairman, to work study. I am agreeing with you. You asked for more money in work study, so I'm recommending $4 million. I hope that they can use that amount of money because they do. The colleges do have to match, I believe, with work study. Then I also am agreeing with you to put more money into child care and agreeing with you to put more money into Indian scholarships. Mr. Chairman, I also am agreeing with you. Here they agreed with you. What I'm saying, I'm also agreeing with you that we should give, OHE to give money to MNSCU for these emergency grants, and I agreed with you, even though it wasn't in your proposal, to increase that by $100,000. You had put in $100,000 each year, and you asked me to go to $150,000 each year.
Okay, so
and I'm agreeing with you.
Okay, thank you. So I appreciate the fact that we came into this conference committee with $100,000 each year, and we've asked for $50,000 more. And the Achieve program from the governor came in at 8.7, and now they're up to almost 12, and we don't even know how if that's going to be enough to cover the program. So.
Mr. Chairman, I believe I came in with the Achieve program at 13.5, and I've dropped that $2 million. So that I could put that money into work study.
Senator Pappas, with an Achieve program that had no house offering, was never heard, and which didn't have the support of the governor's office. I just read the letter.
But
so we got a whole new concept that we're throwing out here on the last day that we write this bill. Maybe we should have MNSCU or the students or somebody come up and tell us what they think of this. Anybody want to come up and comment on it? Anybody from the university or the privates or the MNSCU? I see they're all enthusiastic about this one.
They're just shy.
They're shy.
I got to finish, or I'll forget what I was going to talk. And yet,
none of them, they're getting more money. The student raising the cap 4 years, Senator Roebling, goes all to the university and the four-year not-for-profit. Not a penny of it goes to these kids that have been sitting here all week or 2 weeks, and we're here until we left at 1 o'clock last night. Where's the, and the cap, the two-year cap we wanted to put on the two-year for-profits, you won't accept. You say, well, we cut them back in 2003. We cut $180 million from each system in 2003. So I don't see where there's shared suffering around here. I just don't see where it is. I see the only suffering that's going to take place is in our public institutions. And now Governor Pawlenty, who proposed initially to cut almost 11% from both systems, coming up with you, you two are, you know, in battle now, and you've gotten together and you've circled the forces around us here in the House, and we got to get money to a whole new program that we don't know where it's going to go, who's going to take advantage of it. It's being done at the table as we speak. And I see, the only thing I see is the only people getting hurt here are the University of Minnesota and the NSU system that are going to still take some cuts, and who 2 years from now, I shudder to think what's going to happen. And Governor Pawlenty is, again, being his chief self. A guy that went to the University of Minnesota Law School when it was probably paid at least 66%. You know, and his undergraduate. And now we're, are we at, Ms. Peterson, are we at 50% even at the university? I don't know. So I'm irritated, I guess. I'm irritated that what seems to be an attack on public higher education in the state of Minnesota, and we're all sitting around, and we've got a state grant program that's now going to not only be very generous to the private, but even more generous because we've got two new proposals, your bridge program, which is going to go to anybody to go anywhere, and to the new Achieve, the new Achieve, which is going to go to everybody to go anywhere. And meanwhile, we've just cut another $30 million from each system in our public education system. So excuse me if I'm a little irritated. I'm a little crabby and cranky. It's carried over from last night. I'm sorry. I try to be nice sometimes. I just can't help myself. It's the Croatian.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I actually was hoping that would assume there aren't any students in the room because they're all in class. If there are any students in the room who are full-time students, would you raise your hand? These young people you're talking about are lobby. Oh, yeah, back here. Jahan, he's the full-time student.
There we go.
Working for me. The young people you're referring to are lobbyists.
I know.
Yeah.
They don't
they're just young.
As much as the other
they probably don't. Mr. Yeah. Chairman.
Grab how much you make and then we'll answer the other one. Can I tell us?
I
think
36.
Okay. Oh, should
that's
we start with you, Scott? Scott, should we start with you or Donna, maybe, or who else? Where's Kathy? How about you back there, my arranged friend? Okay, forget it. I'm just kidding.
Mr. Chairman, the other thing I wanted to say is the first day we met, we did talk about the Achieve program, and I did mention at that time that I'd had conversations with the office and that we are looking at a way to scale it so there wouldn't be a cliff at, you know, Pell Grant eligibility, but that we would scale it up to a little higher income. So I did talk about that. I was open to that proposal and working that type of proposal out with the governor. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to continue. Mr. Chairman, we are moving off our position of no funding for Power Review. Last offer, we suggested $1 million in one-time money. We are now offering $1 million in the base. Then on the veterinary loan forgiveness, although I have to tell you, I really don't like loan forgiveness programs. I really don't think they're effective. But in the spirit of compromise, we are agreeing to do that. Now, I think that the Office of Higher Education might have to contract maybe with the Department of Health or the Department of Ag to administer this. We need to make sure that we have some money in there for administration. Mr. Chairman, I've agreed to the Cook County NHED eFolio with line item money. I've thought maybe we should cut them 8%, but I'm not proposing that. I have agreed with you, the U of M Wildlife Rehab one-time grant at $400,000.
That issue,
yes.
We had some concerns about
we had fixed the language, yeah. I'm sure they
have the language.
I'm sure the staff has the language, right?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this is language for the high school remedial courses, high school college remedial bridge thing.
That's for the ninth semester to be used this semester.
This is in our bill. I think staff might have to work on language for the ninth semester to be used for the summer bridge program. I don't know if that language is ready yet. Mr. Chairman, yes?
Yes, you would have something to fix up the language, and we agreed to the ninth semester being used either for summer bridge or by anybody else who doesn't like to use it that way.
Mr. Chair, no, I don't, but I'm sure that with the Office of Higher Education's help, we could adapt that relatively quickly.
Okay, then, Mr. Chairman, we've agreed with you to not do the institutional partnership requirement. I think we've agreed to not do the safety officers 10 semesters. Mr. Chairman, I would like to hear from
Senator Roman.
I'm just wondering if one of the reasons we didn't agree with the safety officers 10 semesters at first was because we were 8 semesters for everybody else. If we go to 9, I suppose we should be considered.
I would assume that wouldn't be very expensive, and that would be an easy one.
We could do that. That's fine. Mr. Chairman, I think we need to hear from Minskew about your Iron Range map and the tuition cap. And I...
Minskew? Welcome to the committee, Minskew. How are you? Go ahead. We're talking about
spare words, Robert.
Yeah. The tuition.
We're talking how 2 + 3 equals 8. And that where I come from, 2 + 3 doesn't equal 8, so you tell me how 2 + 3 equals 8.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Mr. Chairman,
are we reaching?
I think we want is we need to have a soft cap, some legislative intent, like we do with the university. And I think we need to have Ms. King's cooperation with what will work for them and not create a cliff for next millennium, would be my goal.
Well, Senator Pappas and members, there's going to be a cliff in the next millennium. I think my members, we talked about this openly in our committee. We have agreed with the University of Minnesota and Minnesota that there is going to be a cliff. But at least now, for this biennium, when our economy
about tuition. Our proposal to you was really a two-stage proposal, that we would, with the board, work as hard as we could to limit tuition increases, and the federal stimulus money is a great aid to that goal. By using the federal stimulus money to provide revenue to the colleges and the universities that we otherwise would have tried to get from tuition, and that we would raise base rates so that when we got to 2012, the cliff in the tuition rate was minimized. So specifically, what we talked with you about was to approve a rate increase of 5% a year, year over year, and to use federal stimulus funds to buy that rate increase down to 2% in 10 and 3% in 11. So the students would see an increase of 2% in 10. The next year, their base would go up 5% from the first year, another 5%, and then we'd buy that second 5% down by 3%. Doing it that way, all the federal money would go out to the campuses. They would use all of the federal funds that are in these bills, and we would go into 12 with a 2% clip. The 12 base rate would go up 2% before we then faced a 12 increase. That was our approach to balancing our objective to keep the cost down using federal funds this biennium, but also to try to preserve our capacity in 2012 by not having a large cliff coming in with a rate increase. Our great concern, Madam Chair, is that we go into 12, we're facing another large state reduction, and because tuition rates have been held down this biennium, we have a very large tuition increase in front of us in 12 before we deal with the 2012-2013 state budget. That would be a great disservice to our students, and it would be extremely disruptive to our colleges and universities. So we're trying to balance these competing objectives by asking for approval of a base rate change and a buy down. Now I think we get into the Senate math versus the Iron Range math, which is a charming concept that I'm going to try to figure out another way to take advantage of someday, because we're talking about a base rate increase first and then a buy down, and that's why the arithmetic. We would like to increase the base both years from one year to the next, like we routinely do. Every year tuition goes up, but then use the federal funds that you're able to provide us to avoid the actual cost increase to the students for 2 years, so that all the federal funds would go to the campuses. The students would see an actual cost increase of 2% in the first year and 6% in the second year. And then in the third year, there'd be a 2% base rate, a 2% cliff when the federal funds are gone. 6%. The 6%, Madam Chair, is a result of our using federal funds to buy the first year down. So there's a 3% to make up.
So 3% and 3%.
That's correct.
Not 5%, 3%.
That's our
8%,
6%. 6% in the second year and 2% in the third year is the cliff.
Well, Ms. King, how does raising tuition in the second year earlier than what I understood our agreement to be help the students? You're still going to end up paying in the third year either way. Maybe things will get better out there and you won't have to raise so much in the next biennium.
Mr. Chair, we've tried very hard to think about this biennium and next biennium as kind of a package strategy, because the federal funds this biennium are such a big one-time infusion. And so if we don't keep our eye on 12 and 13, we're just going to march into a wall. So we've been focusing very hard on the four-year part of this. If we aren't able to go into 12 with a base rate increase, then we have created a wall for ourselves in 12 before the next biennial budget discussion. And that's a word for us. In this biennium, we keep the cost down for the students with the help of the federal funds. And that's a commitment.
Keep them down very good.
We keep them down to 2% in the first year and 6% in the second year. hoping I can. And let me get Judy up here to make sure that this was calculated on a 5 and a 5. So I'll ask Judy to read through this. Judy Bogus, read through this spreadsheet.
Tuition, would you like it on that basis for like a university? I could also just do it on $100 if that makes it easier.
Can you give us a real life example?
Okay.
Give us a Mankato or something.
What I can do, I've got before me the average for the universities. So this would be.
But these are average. And I always like to say, you know, the average height and weight of an Iron Range member of the Iron Range delegation is 6'2". 280 pounds, and then I walk in the room. So I don't like average. Give us a real live example.
Okay, I don't have a real live example in front of me. So
well,
the best I can do is the average.
Okay.
The average on a per credit rate right now at our universities is $185.37. A 5% increase on that rate in the first year would bring it up to $194.87. We would then have an increase of 5%. That would be $9.50. So that's what the 185 to 194. It's $9.50. Of that, we would buy that down by 3% or $5.70. That would mean that the student would pay $3.80 more per credit in fiscal 10. And that means that they would have paid for 2%. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. The 380 is what the student would pay. In the second year, then, in 2011, we would raise the tuition again. The stated tuition rate would go up another 5%. So we would go from the $194 to the $204.87. That would be a $10 increase on a per credit basis. Then we would buy that down by 2%. That would mean that we would use the stimulus money to bring $4 of that $10 increase. The increase for the student would be $6 of the 5% increase in 2011. And however, the increase that the student would be paid is now the total of the $5.70 that was the stimulus buy down in the first year, along with the increase now of $6, so they would have an $11.70 increase in the second year. And then as you go out into 2012, of the $10 that we increased in 2011, they would have $4 of a tail or a cliff that would be there.
$11.70 times.
Yes.
Oh,
it seemed to be fairer to worry about the tuition across the board, especially in those areas where you're getting a lot of growth, which seems to be, if testimony was correct, in the two-year publics. It would seem to me to be interested in keeping a reduced tuition across the board for all students rather than starting new programs that are focused on a population of the student. I mean, all students are struggling.
Well, I tend to agree with you, Mr.
Chairman.
Okay, well, I don't know, do the...
Chairman, we have the back of the page.
I know we have the back of the page. I was just wondering, does anybody else in the audience want to weigh in on this tuition proposal or not? Sue, do you want to weigh in on it? No? No? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, just quickly on the back of the page, these are things that have been in both offers. So the Senate proposal for non-resident tuition, we go with the House, which is, we're silent. We are accepting, this is big, we're accepting the House provision to have a separate line item for the central office and shared services. We'll try it out, Mr. Chairman. But I do have concerns about that.
Yeah, thank you. Before we were talking about the ability of the institutions to move within a line item, we're struggling. But that fact is when they do move, that we can. You know, that is apparent that there has been movement within the line item, and one of those line items then shows a deficit and another one an increase, but it shows what has been done. Would that be the same within this line item? If we're just indicating that that's in a line item and movement from that line item, we allowing them to move from the line item?
Mr. Chairman, no. The House is not allowing them to move from the line item.
That's what I'm asking.
They're saying this is what you have to spend on the central office, and that's it. I mean, I think that's pretty rigid. And if the House wanted to allow some flexibility with some kind of reporting language, I think that would be more workable.
This is a very large line item, though.
What they're spending now. But as Ms. King said, if a college president wanted to request more services from the shared services office, they wouldn't be able to do that under this rigid language. But I know this is important to the House, and I thought, well, we can try it out and see what kind of problems it creates even between now and next year.
Well,
it is a $94 million line.
$40 million.
He's talking biannually, and I think it's a lot of money, and I think the central office would be one. And I don't think that the example that you gave and that Ms. King gave was correct the other day, but let's move on.
Thank you.
Just to clarify on that, are you saying that if, say, a college president realizes that they have a half-time staff that needs something, a central office, or maybe a group of college presidents, but the central office could probably do it with one person where each campus had a half-time person doing it? Under this scenario, would they be able to bring that into that central office or not if the campuses gave them the money for it? I mean, suppose they decided they really wanted that. Could the campuses take part of their allocation and give it to the central office to pay for that service?
First of all, I think with a line item of $94 million over the biennium, they could probably hire a person to do that if that were a concern, if it were for a number of institutions. But I'll ask Doug because how do you...
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, I don't think they would be able to just transfer the money from the campus to the central office. No, because there is a fixed appropriation. However, as the chairman indicates, within $100 million at the central office, they might be able to reallocate their priorities internally for 1 to 2 years until this comes before us again, which is what the campuses do every day of the week.
I continue to want to give them the flexibility to put together the best business model that they can, to be as efficient as they can, and I too have concerns about this. It may not be a big deal for a year or two, but
not just the central office proposal.
So, I don't know how tight we're holding the belt to start a program and program stuff.
Mr. Chair, a chief is not a brand new program.
This proposal is.
Certainly is.
Mr. Chairman, you spend the money too. You're not giving the money to Minsky. You just spend it in a different way, the $19 million. So we're both spending the money. Mr. Chairman.
I know, but I was trying to give it to kids from work study.
Mr. Chairman, all my money is scholarship money. It's all going to kids.
Yes, but it's going out in a different amount than we've ever had.
Well, be a little more open-minded and look towards change and reform and what's best for kids.
My brain's as big as the Masaba pit.
Yeah.
Just open.
I'm going to lose it. Dennis, would you continue explaining the back of the page? You do a better job than I do.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, there was a provision in the House bill that said that the legislature intends to increase the amount of money allocated to the framework, and the Senate's offer yesterday was to not have that provision, and the House agreed.
No, we never agreed to this. This is not part of our. We did not agree to that.
House position.
I don't have the House position.
Our House position was here on the framework, no. We put no House position.
Okay. I apologize.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rubin.
What is the framework you're talking about? I'm not very familiar.
It's the allocation back to the campuses. And remember, we eliminated some language when we went through this the other day. We had talked about prioritizing, remember, to the bottom line was that we're going to try to, any cuts aren't going to be to the actual teaching to the students who benefit the school. You didn't like that language. We put a period at the end of one place and eliminated a bunch of language.
Yeah, I think
this is just to reinforce that money is, you know, the allocations are going back.
Yeah, I think our intention was to go with the House position on that. And then because you gave up on the other areas.
So
we can change that to, say, House position on intense increase of framework.
Senator Pence.
Okay, Dennis, go ahead.
I don't have the House information.
There's the House information right here. The rest are all
the rest is on your sheet are what
that was easy to understand. Okay.
So the next one is a provision that said there would be the amount of money allocated to campuses, and the Senate recommended not having that in the bill, and the House agreed. The provision that directed the Minsky system not to allocate money to competitive salaries, awards of excellence, and a couple of other activities. The Senate agreed to that with the stipulation that the sentence saying the money had to go to the allocations framework would not be included, and the House agreed to that. And also on the House provision addressing the board's ability to allocate money to technology and services to the underrepresented. The Senate agreed to the limitation on technology, but not the other one, and the House agreed with that. On the University of Minnesota investment data.
Mr. Chairman, did you want to reconsider that? I agreed with the House position, but I know that Representative Kalin is trying to broker some kind of compromise on that.
Well, Representative Kalin.
Some reporting requirement and how they spent the investment money. I gave you language last night.
I know, but Representative Kalin isn't involved in this process, and we haven't agreed to anything. You agreed to let the language hang
I did.
In the bill.
I did, but I thought you
and
had
there
an
is
issue.
A data privacy omnibus. There are data practices omnibus where Senator or Representative Kalin's language is it, and that I don't believe has come to the floor
Did you want, I thought I ought, I suggested to you maybe we put in the liquor language in exchange for this with the reporting requirement. Anyway, I offered to give it up, but I'm asking if you want, if you're interested in revisiting.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, on the Senate language to allow PSEO marketing, the Senate agreed to or suggested to exclude that provision, and the House agreed. On the Senator Latz's criminal record notice, Senator Latz, I believe last Friday, handed out some suggested language, and that language has been drafted into an amendment and is available to be put into the bill. And the Senate's position on having the Office of Higher Education do a teacher education report, the Senate recommended to have that in the bill in the House of Reed.
Yes. Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, before we recess for the House to consider our offer, would it be a good idea, would it be helpful for the staff or the reviser or anybody if we have any amendments ready, if we adopt them, or is it your preference
no,
to wait?
I was just going to bring that up. So do we have the last amendment done? Yes. You have it ready, but no copy. Can you read it for me? And do we have the, we've got the, here it is here. The 835 amendment? Public or private secondary educational institution. I think given what the I think there were some concerns about this from the privates, but given the fact that they're doing pretty good in this bill as far as the gap being raised, et cetera, that they can handle this. Representative Lax moves the 835 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? That motion prevails. Do we have the amendment for the cloning?
We'll get make copy.
Senator Lynch's amendment. Senator Lynch, go ahead and discuss your amendment. I understand it's all technical.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. 87 amendment members. It is a technical amendment. It has been reviewed by both the MDA and Safety Net Coalition, and they both are supportive of the amendment and both classified it as technical. So appreciate your support.
Is there anybody in the audience that wants to speak on this one way or the other? Everybody agreed? Peace in the Valley? Representative, okay, then Senator Lynch moves the ART-3A-7 amendment.
Don't have it yet, then, Mr. Chairman.
It is nothing more than a bunch of numbers moving around.
Oh, my God, I'm glad I waited for it, Mr. Chairman.
There are no changes to what we heard the other day. Why do we emphasize on 1.32 the 2,000 hours again? And I thought that was in the last time.
Representative Rukavina, the reason that you see beginning on 1.26, there was recognition by both sides, if you will, that this particular section was needed, wasn't clear, and so an attempt was made to add a few commas and add a few additional words. There is no change in the scope, no change in the intent, but it was simply a matter of bringing both parties to the table to say, you know, this really makes sense to both of us, and we both agree with what the meaning is behind this.
Okay.
Do you have the
nothing more than that.
All
John, make sure the A23 gets to the House members. Okay.
All those in favor then of the ART-87 amendment, I would say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
language that's already in the Senate bill. Wiseman, did you want to say anything more about it? It's an evaluation.
I think this is language that we talked about and was in our Senate offer.
In your Senate offer, this is all dealing with your summer bridge program.
That's right. Correct.
Can we look at this?
Yeah, go ahead, look at it.
We'll look at that one. And then we have the E53 amendment, which I understand will be in here as a rider and gives cloning language that I don't think the university particularly likes, but it's been looked at by them and they've been living it. Would the university care to comment on this? Marty, do you want to?
You look at the K53?
Oh, I think it's an accurate statement. They don't like it, but they can live with it. I think it's been reworked a little bit by the university, and so we'll offer it up. Questions on it?
Can we have a moment to look at the amendment, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chairman, members, Marty McDonough from the University of Minnesota. Representative Slocum, as Representative Rukavina indicated, these were floor amendments in both houses, and these weren't generated at the University of Minnesota. What we do typically in the Academic Health Center, especially in the area of stem cell research, is we mirror, our region's policy mirrors federal law. And as that changes and ebbs and flows, and now we're moving in one direction, this moves us back in a different direction. So we would prefer no language at all related to human cloning. We're more than willing to accept a ban on human reproductive cloning, as it was indicated on the House or the Senate floor. The author said that the university is doing, or they had reason to believe we're doing human reproductive cloning, which violates university policy. And the language was accepted. So we had offered other language banning human reproductive cloning, which currently is university policy, of course, that we would not partake in that. So this is language that was given to us through the governor's office, through the House chairman, and this is something, as the chair said, we could live with, but we prefer no language.
Mr. McDonough, does this in any way hamper the research you're doing? We've talked about when President Brunick was up on the range last year at a Spokane, on a range association for disabilities in schools, talking about the remarkable things going on. One of them, the heart generation. I can't remember the name of the research.
Doris Taylor.
Pardon me?
Dr. Doris Taylor.
Dr. Doris Taylor's, yes.
Yes.
Does it in any way restrict that type of research or the funds that are federal funds and other private research funds that are coming in from the university?
Mr. Chair, members, this wouldn't restrict any federal funds. Certainly there's going to be more federal funds and we can use them more widely on stem cell research under the current administration. This is a blanket statement about what we can use state money for. And you may recall last year that the legislature overwhelmingly passed a bill enabling us to use state funds for stem cell research that the governor vetoed. So this is kind of a reversal of your position from last year. It won't have a significant impact because we have not been using state funds on embryonic stem cell research at the university because the federal funds prohibited us from doing so. This is more about the climate of the state. We're making big investments in biomedical research, and we think this sends a pretty bad signal around the country about where our legislature and governor stand on this kind of regenerative medicine, which we're very excited about doing.
Well, I don't want to certainly restrict that professor because there's a few people around here that could use a new heart. I won't mention me, but
I'm really interested in Alzheimer's research.
I've got Iron Range Alzheimer's. I'm starting to forget everything but the grudges. So, Senator Lentz.
Pass, Mr. Chair.
Senator Lynch, did you have your hand up? Senator Rowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do remember, and it came to this excellent point, what was just said, that Dr. Sarah said that they haven't used this money, that they are going to have access to more, they haven't used state money in the past, and they are probably going to have access to more federal dollars now as that change occurs. And they have used private funding in the past, so they have been and will continue to be able to do that research at the university. And basically, this just says an appropriation in this section only is for that. And so I don't think we're really limiting them, and I think that's why they have agreed to agree to it or accept it, because we're not truly limiting them because they have other resources.
Senator Rowe, maybe my thought process works a little different than yours. You're concerned about me limiting the central office's ability to move 90-some, almost $100 million around, but then you don't worry about limiting the university on using money that could benefit society, people's life, and everything else. So I'll give you this one. I'm just hoping, having just watched my mother deteriorate with Parkinson's disease over a number of years to the point where, the poor little thing couldn't see herself anymore. And she's very, embarrassed about it, and watched that hand sink right down almost into her lap. And if we could stop that from happening to people, or if we can heal somebody's heart who's waiting in line now for a human heart that, these types of things are very important as humanity moves forward and who knows where we're going. But, you're restricting the university, I think, as much as a restrictive way and supporting this language, and I think I am by restricting a little bit of money at the central office of Minsky. So we all rationalize things in the way we rationalize them. I don't really like this language, but I think I have to go back to the House, and you probably have to go back to the Senate with some language in this bill that deals with motion. So we'll accept this language, knowing full well that the university is nervous about it and could have an impact on what we're doing at the university and all the money that we put into those four, is it now five buildings, research buildings, that are sitting there in the bonding bill, and have an impact on business, our business climate, which I know, a lot of people at the table worry about. Barlett, did you have your hand up?
Mr. Chair, I think you addressed a lot of my issues. I wondered if there was anybody else in the audience that wanted to speak about this. I'm not sure.
Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to talk on this issue? Representative Haas.
I think we also have to recognize that the governor's signature on a bill, if this works out as a compromise, I suspect he will be signing. Is that not what you... Site distance.
Representative
Blank. I just wanted to, I agree with Senator Roblin's interpretation of what Dr. Sarah said, except
would that be maybe a better way to approach this? This sounds kind of like a kind of sloppy to me.
We were talking amongst ourselves back here. If you would allow us, we'd like to take it back to the manager of the program and make sure she can flesh out any other issues that we haven't been able to raise. And then bring it back to you later today.
Who would that be?
Who would that be? Jeannie Dodds is the manager of the program. She's taking that program. She knows more of the details of this than any of us see.
Ms. Fine, where did this language come from? Well, why don't you flush that out then?
Okay.
We still have the any other issues that we have here. We've got can our staff work on some dates language to what we're going? I am assuming that members don't have a problem with Dennis's numbers. Is our fiscal analyst kind of agree with us? I'm prepared. Work on that, and then you two, I understand, can work on the base somewhere between us and Dennis. And then we've got the let's see, the dentistry stuff is done. We've got the Mayo Rider that we'll just send it the language.
And Lynch has a counter proposal.
In your
the language and the money.
No, that's not this.
It's all in
the list. Is it on this list here? Or what's that?
Is it on your list? Last night?
No. No, it's not.
You got a new list?
This is a list of a variety of like sentences that haven't been adopted.
Well, why don't we just go over that and then we'll read it?
That's the same thing for Minsky on the second line.
Can I just move each of these?
Chairman, I'll move a language, identical language on R3, 3.1 to 3.3.
All righty. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion prevails. R10.
R10 is the same sentence for Minsky.
Language, then, identical language, then, R10. Are there any questions on it?
back to R24 for just a brief minute, and maybe staff can just confirm for me. I think in one of our earlier sessions, we adopted the House language on 16.9 for the University of Minnesota Mayo Foundation in partnership, and I'm trying to clarify if we took the dollar with that, or if that is yet to be discussed.
I think we treated both those programs a little better than
Mr. Chair, thanks for pointing that out, and I would recommend to Senator Pappas and my members that we yield to the House position.
Maybe I can get a vote on you later on today. So, well, members, why don't we then, after going through all of this, we have the other, the last 839 amendment, so everybody's got the fiscal stabilization account.
Mr. Chair, it's the last title, SCS-2083-839.
That's the one I have. Are there any questions on this at all, members? It's an accounting type. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, that motion prevails. And if nothing else, then we will look at your offer. And this piece is done here.
The only thing that happened is you were going to look at this program.
Okay. We'll be in recess. And no, we haven't. And we'll be in recess at 12. Can we, are we going to be able to do this during the day sometime while you're in session?
Yes.
So we can get in there. So, we'll play by ear and we'll get back to you, but members, maybe around 1-ish. One to 2-ish. We'll see what happens.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.